around the world at kfai.org, where community grows.
You are listening to North Star Stories, Voices from Where We Live, a daily newscast about what it means to live in Minnesota.
In today's news, Otter Tail County awards big bucks to fight drug addiction, how the Trump travel ban is impacting Minnesotans, and the Fond du Lac ban breaks ground on a new elder housing complex. I'm Chantel Sings. Otter Tail County, located in west central Minnesota, is taking decisive action against the opioid crisis by allocating $400,000 in settlement funds to five local organizations. The grants, part of a broader $3 million settlement, will support initiatives like a youth engagement program in Pelican Rapids and recovery housing at a halfway home. The funds will be used on prevention, treatment, and recovery efforts. The money supports 2 years of programs with the hope of creating a lasting positive change in the community. Up next, the Trump administration is preventing people from 12 countries, including Somalia, from entering our country. Minnesota has one of the largest Somali and Hmong populations in the U.S. Reporter Zan Holston looks at how the executive order is impacting some Minnesotans.
A new executive order revives and expands an immigration policy introduced during President Trump's first term, restricting immigration and travel from 19 countries. Among them, Somalia and Laos, two nations with deep ties to Minnesota.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ahmed Abdi, a radio host and former reporter for the St. Cloud Times, said the renewed policy wreaks havoc on immigrants and refugees and family members already living in the state.
This refugee process or immigration, it's not something that you can do within 6 months or within a year.
The new policy completely bans all immigration and travel from Somalia, citing national security. But Abdi said it disrupts a long and highly vetted process. During Trump's first term, he said, many Somali immigrants had already cleared most hurdles, only to be blocked at the final step.
They were supposed to get their visa from the embassy. After 5 or 6 or 7 years, then because of the executive order last time, were stopped.
Some of those visa applications were reinstated under President Biden. Abdi also questioned the logic and rule at a time when Trump is advocating for white South African immigration.
But we have thousands of people that want to come into our country, and they're white farmers, and they feel that they're going to die.
It's a racist politics, I mean, because you don't want to bring one refugee person, but you do want to bring another refugee.
The story is different, but similarly tense for Minnesota's Lao and Hmong communities. Sangmani Laboud is a Minnesota-based historian who studies Southeast Asian diaspora communities. He says this new executive order didn't come as a surprise.
This is actually version 2 of the visa ban specifically for Laos.
While the new policy doesn't fully ban travel from Laos, it does suspend most visa categories, including student, tourism, and business visas. The Trump administration argues the move is necessary because countries like Laos refuse to accept deportees from the U.S., as well as concerns about overstayed visas. Laboud says it goes deeper than that.
This continued pressure that's been going on for over 20 years for Laos to sign a repatriation agreement.
Many of the people the U.S. wants to deport aren't recognized by Laos as citizens, so it won't accept them back.
In order to be accepted to a country, they have to be a national. And so from that standpoint, it's difficult for the government of Laos to, agree with the U.S. on anything.
Laboud said concerns extend beyond deportation.
Even from Lao folks who are U.S. citizens are very anxious and very fearful of not being able to come back to the U.S. when they visit Laos.
While the state has a large network of Southeast Asian advocacy organizations that will continue to fight for the rights of immigrants and refugees, Laboud said communities may be reluctant to speak out right now.
It's a catch-22, right? How loud do we want to be about it, right? And if we are loud enough, that also attracts attention.
For North Star Stories, I'm Zan Holston.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Elders from the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa, will soon have a new home. The band broke ground recently on a new $6 million senior housing facility just across the street from the original building. Leaders say the upgrade was long overdue. The current building, which has been there more than 40 years, no longer meets fire or ADA codes. The new building will include 18 one-bedroom apartments and is expected to be completed in about a year. The project has been in the works for several years, but got slowed down by the pandemic.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
In today's stories, the state ramps up oversight of autism and housing support programs. Then, shocked by the military-like presence by federal agents earlier this month, some in Minneapolis are still demanding answers. And a school in Winona is getting a new indoor athletic complex. I'm Gracie J. The Minnesota Department of Human Services is placing tougher screening requirements on Medicaid-backed providers of autism and housing services. The providers are now under the high-risk category. That means owners will have mandated fingerprinting, screening visits before enrollment in Medicaid, and unannounced site visits. The change comes after a federal investigation of two autism centers in the state last year. Just last month, a report found DHS has 40 active fraud investigations into housing stabilization providers. Next, when federal agents used what appeared to be a strong military-like force to serve search warrants earlier this month in Minneapolis, it left a lasting impression in the community. Reporter McFinnegan takes us to some community meetings where residents are still searching for answers.
Federal officials are now saying the discovery of 900 pounds of methamphetamine with a street value of more than $22 million is what prompted agents to raid a Mexican restaurant in South Minneapolis on June 3rd. The military-style operation caused immediate protests from community members who feared a raid by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. Some protesters witnessed ICE badges on officers' uniforms.
No one's negating the fact that there's a need to attend to criminal activity. We see it here all the time. We know. We don't want drugs on our street.
Pastor Geraldo Sorto serves this community at St. Paul San Pablo Lutheran Church.
We need leaders that are able to respond with integrity now, not later in the future, in order to prevent a future where masked officials with assault rifles becomes normalized and where we begin to accept that that kind of terror is okay.
Community members were surprised to see Minneapolis police and Hennepin County sheriffs assisting federal agents.
They tear gas everybody in the whole area.
I've never quite believed Minneapolis's separation ordinance. There's a careful choice in wording when I hear some of our elected officials talk about what they're not willing to do and what they're required to do, and I put that in quotes.
Minneapolis Police Chief Brian O'Hara shared concerns about the federal show of force.
I think the manner in which some of it was handled was tone deaf for the situation.
Hennepin County Sheriff DeWanna Witt said that while she feels the feds could have handled it differently, she raised concerns about protesters disrupting the operation.
Right now, we need the community's help, we need the media's help, and making sure that you support these people that are continuing to show up to combat the people that are trying to harm our communities.
Other community members witnessed agents using excessive force against protesters that day. Minneapolis City Council member Jason Chavez, who represents the area, said he's taking steps to protect his community, which has a large population of immigrants and people of color.
You saw scare tactics being descended upon our community, and this has just caused a very traumatic incident for many of the people that live there.
Chavez prompted City Council to investigate the police department's involvement in the event. He says the community needs that transparency to build back trust.
I think it's important to figure out what breakdown in communication happened, what was the city's role in it, and make this information publicly available so our residents know what happened, what went wrong, and what needs to change in the future. And we're going to get that report back when the city auditor is done with this work by July 31st.
I want accountability that doesn't deflect to what the federal government did.
For North Star Stories, I'm Mick Finnegan.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Students at Cotter School in Winona will soon have a new place to work out. Cotter purchased a former dormitory from Winona State University. Thanks to a generous donation, they plan to tear it down and build a new indoor athletic complex in its place. The new facility will include turf and hard surfaces, a walking track, as well as year-round space for student athletics and community recreation. Cotter says the project is a major investment in student wellness and Winona's broader needs for indoor sports facilities.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
In today's stories, a military celebration in Washington, D.C. is countered with protests around the country, including here in Minnesota. Researchers urge long COVID patients to enroll in a new study, and Amtrak's new route outperforms expectations. I'm Chantel Sings. As President Trump held a military parade in the nation's capital celebrating the Army's 250th birthday over the weekend, those opposing the president took to the streets in protest. As part of the No Kings nationwide day of defiance, dozens of protests took place around Minnesota. Zan Holston has the story.
People we love are under attack.
What was meant to be part of a nationwide act of defiance to the Trump presidency took on additional meaning after a political assassination. The No Kings rally in St. Paul, familiar chants carried a new weight after news broke that a gunman shot and killed House DFL leader Melissa Hortman and her husband in their home. The alleged shooter, Vance Bolter, also wounded Senator John Hoffman and his wife. Police found No Kings flyers in Bolter's vehicle, prompting the Minnesota State Patrol to urge demonstrators to stay home.
Given the targeted shootings of state lawmakers that happened overnight, we are asking the public to not attend today's planned demonstrations across Minnesota out of an abundance of caution.
That warning was not enough to keep tens of thousands of protesters away from the state capitol. For Lisa, the assassinations only strengthened her resolve to get out and make her voice heard.
It's more important than ever to still be here, because if we don't show America what happened in Minnesota today, it just gets put under the rug. I mean, we have to be here.
The St. Paul protest was just one of hundreds across the country over the weekend. The events were touted as a counterpoint to celebrations for the 250th anniversary of the U.S. military, which many believe was being exploited as a tribute to Donald Trump's birthday. While Trump supporters marked the day with a military parade, No Kings marchers held signs calling out what they see as the slide of American democracy into authoritarianism.
Everything that Trump has stood for since he was elected has just been opposite democracy values.
Gene said that he was here to counter the narrative that protests are violent and to call attention to what he sees as deliberate provocation.
He's going into cities and provoking riots by bringing troops in because he likes to command troops. And this isn't democracy. It's really dictatorship.
Among the crowd was a couple dressed as George and Martha Washington. They said the founding fathers wouldn't recognize today's leadership.
We thought George and Martha needed to be here because this is not the government we created. The colonies were not meant to be governed by a king or someone taking full control and messing with the three branches of government that checks and balances.
For Jennifer, the protest was personal.
You have to be here. This is exactly why you have to be here. We need voices of reason.
Her father is an Iranian immigrant. Her daughter lives with a rare genetic disorder. She said Trump's policies are resulting in devastating losses and that staying silent would cost lives. For her, the protest was about joy and peace, as well as resistance.
This is just an alternative to a military march in Washington, D.C. for somebody's birthday. There are plenty of ways to celebrate that don't take $40 million. This is one of them, and we're not going to let fear stop us. We can't anymore.
No king!
No king!
For North Star Stories, I'm Zan Holston.
What are we saying?
No king!
You are listening to North Star Stories. The University of Minnesota is seeking long COVID patients for a new clinical trial. Researchers are testing a new drug to see if it can help with symptoms like brain fog, memory loss, and fatigue. The trial is part of the nationwide search for effective treatments for long COVID sufferers. About 15 million Americans have long COVID. Participants will take the medication or a placebo for 6 months. The full study will last about a year. U of M researchers hope to enroll 135 people in phases over the next few years. Amtrak's new Borealis line is exceeding the expected use during its first year, recording more than 200,000 riders. The Twin Cities to Chicago train runs along the same corridor as the long-distance Empire Builder, which serves a broader region. Together, the two trains carried nearly 300,000 passengers last year, a massive jump in ridership along the route. Officials in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Illinois say the Borealis train has made rail travel more reliable and accessible across the Upper Midwest.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
Today, more Minnesotans are losing their local newspapers. Then we learn about the history behind the Juneteenth holiday and a new campaign to stay cool. I'm Gracie J. After half a century in the business, a publishing company in northwestern Minnesota has officially stopped its presses. Richards Publishing produced four local newspapers. The closure now puts Clearwater, Marshall, Red Lake, and Polk counties in what is referred to as a news desert, meaning residents in those counties have few to no sources for local news. The company says it was a difficult decision, but there just wasn't enough revenue to keep operating. The former editor of one of the newspapers is planning to launch a digital news platform called The Northern Neighbor. Well, today is Juneteenth, which is more than just a day off of work for federal and state employees. It's viewed by some as America's second Independence Day, celebrating the end of slavery. Jose Osorio looks at the history of the holiday here in Minnesota.
From Minneapolis to St. Paul, Duluth to Rochester, Minnesotans are commemorating and celebrating Juneteenth.
Frederick Douglass, Ella Baker,
Nat Turner. In 2021, Juneteenth was declared a federal holiday. The state of Minnesota soon followed, officially recognizing it as a state holiday for the first time in 2024.
Rosa Parks.
Toni Morrison.
Fannie Lou Hamer.
This year, communities throughout Minnesota are finding ways to acknowledge the importance of the day.
Kids growing up nowadays and the younger people growing up, that's one of the things that's missing is those like summer cookouts and family reunions together. And so something like Juneteenth is a good time to really kind of bring that vibe and that feeling back.
Shamika Bogan with the North Side Juneteenth organization describes the atmosphere of fun, family, and education associated with Juneteenth. The North Side Juneteenth celebration is a series of community events leading up to Juneteenth on the north side of Minneapolis. This year, the festivities began last weekend.
We're big on people really having an understanding of like the meaning of Juneteenth and just the culture and the creativity and the history behind it. So that even though it's a fun, family-friendly event, what are you learning while you're here that you didn't already know?
Along with the fun cultural, culinary, and artistic events that go along with the Juneteenth celebration, also comes a deep recognition of the historical weight associated with the date and the holiday.
Commemorates the end of slavery.
Chantel Rodriguez, senior public historian with the Minnesota Historical Society.
It marks the day on June 19th, 1865, when Major General Gordon Granger arrived in Galveston, Texas, to inform enslaved people that they were free.
The Minnesota Historical Society developed a website as a vehicle to help those who are interested to learn more about the holiday's rich history and Black freedom celebrations. Ms. Rodriguez says the Juneteenth celebrations are not a modern occurrence and have a long history in Minnesota.
We have this wonderful, long, and rich history of African-American communities and even enslaved peoples who were celebrating what we call Emancipation Days since way before 1865.
Throughout Minnesota, there are several events celebrating the holiday, including last weekend's Freedom Day Juneteenth celebration in Rochester, Duluth's Freedom Ball, and St. Cloud's annual Juneteenth event. Kevin Lindsay, CEO of the Minnesota Humanities Center, discusses the pride he has in the events the Humanities Center has executed.
Humbly, I would say the fact that we've been able to bring in great speakers such as Angela Tate, Dr. Bernice King, and Bakari Sellers, and now this year, Sherilyn Eiffel, to talk about Juneteenth and talk about African-American history and America's history. I think that that's elevating a conversation as well.
Mr. Lindsay says there's more to Juneteenth than the celebrations.
It is really telling the story of America through the eyes and lens of African Americans. And Juneteenth is the beginning of that story.
Ashe.
For North Star Stories, Ashe. I'm Jose Osorio.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Well, hotter summers are here to stay, and state health officials want Minnesotans to be prepared. The Minnesota Department of Health has launched the Stay Cool MN campaign to help residents remain safe when temperatures heat up. The campaign suggests three practical tips: stay hydrated, stay informed, and stay cool. Extreme heat can be dangerous, especially for vulnerable groups like children, older adults, and outdoor workers. And of course, more summer safety tips are online at mn.gov/heat.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
Coming up, those riding city buses in Mankato will start seeing and hearing some changes. We continue our Pride Month coverage with a look at how a film series is connecting Minnesota's queer communities with others across the globe. And a summer exhibit in Duluth takes visitors back in time. I'm Chantel Sings. Mankato Transit is rolling out changes to increase accessibility for its customers. Riders can expect to hear new voice announcements. Mankato area buses on fixed routes will start featuring digital displays and text-to-speech messaging, which will make it easier for all riders to utilize the transit system. In addition to making the buses compliant with the Americans with Disabilities Act, the city says the upgrades will enhance rider experience as well as driver and rider safety. The enhancements are part of a $350,000 upgrade to Mankato's transit system. Next, as Pride Month is underway, St. Paul-based arts organization MISNA spotlights queer Palestinian and Arab stories with a special film series. Emily Krumberger has more.
We're just so inundated with images of death, of destruction, of massacre, and film and art allow us to see humanity in this particular moment, and in, you know, in all moments, we need that. We need to see life.
Michelle Baruti is the film program's curator for MISNA. The organization, which started in the 1990s, puts on the annual Twin Cities Arab Film Festival, publishes an art and literary journal, and hosts film screenings statewide.
We've taken MISNA and the film festival on the road a few times to Winona and to St. Cloud.
Thank you all for being here. Can you all hear me?
Earlier this month in Minneapolis, MISNA hosted a screening of short films produced by queer Palestinian and Southwest Asia and North Africa, or SWANA, filmmakers.
Tonight's screening is part of an ongoing collaboration between MISNA.
So is a set of 8 short films curated by others who are part of this organization, and they'll be screening globally across different cities all through June and the month of Pride.
MISNA's event was part of a larger series organized by Queer Cinema for Palestine, which will be screened virtually in July.
They were programmed by various folks across the world to attempt to show support for Palestinians. In the wake of the genocide, recent violence, a lot of different film series that usually would take place in Palestine have had to be canceled.
This year's films span genres from stop-motion animation to drama and depicted love stories, heartbreak, and finding joy amidst violence.
You know, our goal isn't to present Arab and SWANA stories for audiences who need to be convinced of the humanity of Arab and SWANA people, but to, you know, see ourselves represented on screen, to see our, you know, the varied communities of Arab and SWANA folks out there that we know exist, but, you know, that of course get sort of flattened into stereotypes.
During Pride Month, this mission is uniquely important for MISNA.
I mean, I think there is stereotype and stigma around the idea that Arab and SWANA communities are particularly oppressive to queer identities.
In the films you'll see tonight, MISNA is excited to participate.
Even in times of fear, violence, and crisis, Michelle says,
continuing to create and make art and tell stories, that's just imperative. How else will we mark this moment? And sometimes it feels like, what else can we do?
Go to MISNA.org for information about upcoming events, including an online reading on June 26th. For North Star Stories, I'm Emily Krumberger.
You are listening to North Star Stories. The Great Lakes Aquarium is bringing the past to the present in a new exhibit. Lava to Lakes invites guests to uncover life's ancient secrets. It features life-size models of ancient marine animals, including horseshoe crabs and extinct armored fish. Guests can even touch jellyfish and small sharks. The immersive show opened Memorial Day weekend and will run through the summer. Minnesota's Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund paid for about half of the exhibit's $1 million cost.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
This is Minnesota Native News. I'm Marie Rock.
This week, tribal colleges and universities react to the planned federal budget. Then, how Cousins brought a family story to life and how the birds got their songs. First, here's reporter Zan Holston with more about federal budget impacts to higher education in tribal colleges.
When Red Lake Nation Hereditary Chief Dan King first heard about potential 40% cuts to tribal colleges and universities, he was upset but not surprised.
We're usually the first to get cut on any cuts and then the last to get added, you know, when there's a new program.
Chief King is also president of Red Lake Nation College, one of the 32 accredited tribal colleges and universities, or TCUs, in the U.S. But President Trump's proposed 2026 budget went even further, slashing money for TCUs by a staggering 83%.
It's the federal Indian grant massacre of 2025.
TCUs are often the only colleges in rural areas. They combine cultural knowledge with academics and help preserve indigenous languages and history. Because they serve many working parents, even the threat of cuts can bring uncertainty, lower enrollment, and stalled programming.
We are the hubs and the lifelines of our communities.
That's Anna Wake Rose, president of AHEC, the American Indian Higher Education Consortium. She said TCUs offer far more than degrees.
Oftentimes, we're the only library in our community. We're the only Head Start program in our community. We're training teachers. We're training nurses.
Rose said most TCUs offer low or no-cost education, helping students graduate debt-free, ready to transfer to four-year schools or enter the workforce. Chief King said that last year, Red Lake Nation College recorded a 52% graduation rate. That's 10% higher than the average for two-year public universities, according to the National Center for Education Statistics. The new fiscal year starts October 1st, but the budget package cutting TCU funding still needs congressional approval. Chief King expects funding to be restored, but if not, he's prepared to take it to court. AHEC's president, Anna Wake Rose, doesn't think it will have to go that far.
We're going to be working a lot with our congressional allies to ensure that TCUs are funded, but we don't ever want to see this type of budget proposal again.
For Minnesota Native News, I'm Zan Holston.
Next, reporter Dan Ninham with author and artist duo Sam and Travis Zimmerman.
I found these stories that my dad had written down, but because they were in pencil, they were disintegrating off the page.
That's Travis Zimmerman, author of How the Birds Got Their Songs, an Ojibwe and English dual language children's book, published in 2024. Travis wanted to share these stories with the next generation.
It'd be great to honor my great-grandma, because they're her stories. But also, you know, I was thinking about my dad getting up in age, and, you know, he's at that time 81. And then at the same time, I have a couple grandkids, so it was also, you know, in my mind, how can I pass these on to them? You know, what kind of gift can I leave the next generation?
So he invited his cousin, artist and author, Sam Zimmerman, to collaborate.
And of course, you know, I'm not going to say no to my cousin.
Sam had already illustrated several children's books and written his own book by that time. So it just seemed a natural connection to ask Sam if he wanted to do the illustrations and really kind of make it a family project.
And so in reading the story and speaking with my dad about it, you know, and he's like, this is a great way to, you know, not only honor our grandfather and his mother, our great-grandmother, but this is also a great way to preserve language. You know, Ojibwe, our language is an endangered language, and there's a resurgence on language revitalization and preservation. And so, yeah, I got to work.
Over the past year, the Zimmerman cousins have toured How the Birds Got Their Songs across Minnesota. The book tour has included events from painting tutorials to classroom read-alouds in English and Anishinaabe Mon.
When Mother Earth was very young and the Great Spirit had created all the beings.
In the future, Travis and Sam hope to collaborate to share another story.
This one, I think, was well enough received, so we are thinking about doing another one. We're going to do a story with animals.
You can catch Sam Zimmerman's special painting class for How the Birds Got Their Songs at the Silver Bay Library on June 27th. Travis says listeners can find him at the Mille Lacs Trading Post and Museum. To access the book, audiobook, and more events, go to mnhs.org. For Minnesota Native News, I'm Dan Ninham.
Minnesota Native News is produced by Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities. Made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.
Support for KFAI comes from First Avenue, presenting Obie Original and the Black Atlantics High Life Dance Party, Saturday, July 5th at the Turf Club. High Life is a musical genre originating from Ghana that incorporates the melodic and rhythmic structure of African music with Western jazz. Minneapolis-based Obie Original and the Black Atlantics use Afrobeat, rock, funk, and high life to create a unique African, American, British, and Caribbean sound. Opening the show are DJ Quay and DJ Goldilocks.